time for the Outspoken Cyclist, your weekly conversation about bicycles, cycling, and related topics. The Outspoken Cyclist is produced for broadcast and podcast, with a new show available every Saturday at 6 p.m. In Northeast Ohio, you can hear it on WJCU 88.7 FM. Catch our podcast after the close of the on-air show at OutspokenCyclist.com, iTunes, Stitcher, or PRX, the Public Radio Exchange. Now here's your host, Diane Jenks.
Hello and welcome to the Outspoken Cyclist. I'm your host, Diane Jenks. This is our show for July 11th, 2020. You know how people always said that Seinfeld was about nothing, and yet you always got something out of it, even if it was just a good belly laugh? Well, my conversation with one of my all-time heroes, although he didn't know that going in, was just like that. Tyler Hamilton and I sat down to chat about, well, nothing and everything, kind of whatever came up. And even though I had a general idea of what I wanted to ask him, the conversation just sort of unfolded in a super organic way. While he claims, as he says, to have been a little shy as a kid, and he liked to let his skis do the talking, he doesn't shy away from his past, and he's quite frank about the choices he made. If you haven't read it, Tyler, along with author Dan Coyle, wrote The Secret Race, a great book that delves deeply into that era of cycling that brought down riders like Tyler, Lance, and more. I highly recommend it. So let's head on out to Missoula, Montana, and let's talk with Tyler Hamilton, one of my heroes. Hi, Tyler. Welcome to The Outspoken Cyclist. Thanks for joining me on the show today.
Hey, thank you so much for having me. It's an honor to be on your podcast.
Well, you have a podcast, so you know how this works. And I wasn't sure. I just realized that you had a podcast. Shame on me. I should be paying better attention.
Oh, no, it's all good. We just started, I don't know, maybe 5-6 months ago. It's been a lot of fun. It's just, yeah, it's just a little bit of a hobby. A buddy of my,
yeah,
buddy and myself, we do. And yeah, we've had great people on our podcast, and it's just fun to see what gets people out of bed in the morning, what makes them tick, and yeah, all sorts of people that like to get out and adventure. So yeah, that's what I still like to do. And so yeah,
we'll let people know before we sign off today that where they can find your podcast and where they can find all the information about what you're doing. But we also,
sure,
we have a couple of things in common besides cycling, and that is dogs.
Dogs.
Yes.
Dogs. Love dogs.
Love dogs.
Love dogs.
And you like yoga.
Love yoga. Love yoga. Yep. Yep. I kind of fell into yoga maybe after I moved here to Missoula. So I've been here, I think, about 8 years. So yeah, maybe after about 6 years, I found yoga. Yeah. I wasn't doing much of anything activity wise, you know, not a whole lot compared to what I used to do. And then, yeah, I found yoga, and just it's been absolutely amazing, you know, for your mind, body, and your soul, for sure. So whenever you come out of a yoga class, you feel, you know, 10 times better. And I really truly believe, like, yoga makes you a better person.
Oh, I love hearing you say that. And other people hearing that from you as opposed to just from me might be convinced to take a yoga,
yeah,
class. And I have a lot of men in my classes, which is, I know, unusual for some people. But let's talk more about Tyler. I'm way more interested in that. You grew up on the East Coast.
Yeah, a town called Marblehead, Mass. Yep, a little bit north of Boston on the coast. Yeah.
And you didn't start out in cycling. So tell us a little bit about your, you know, sort of your history of growing up there and your sport and how you ended up on a bicycle.
Yeah, great question. You know, I grew up, two awesome parents, amazing brother and sister, older brother and sister. And we like to do a lot of adventures up in New Hampshire, so north of Massachusetts. We'd head up into the White Mountains of New Hampshire on the weekends. And, you know, in the summer, spring, summer, fall, it was lots of hiking. And in the winter, it was skiing. My parents loved to ski. They met skiing on Mount Washington. You know, following my brother and sisters in their footsteps, they loved to ski. So, I joined them, and then I followed in my brother's footsteps by starting ski racing. I think I started when I was like 7 or 8. And I just loved it. I loved it, you know, crashing through the gates. And that was a ton of fun. And it really took a lot of focus, and I enjoyed that. And I was, you know, I was just a quiet kid, but liked to work hard. Kind of, I feel like that's who I've always been. A little bit shy, but you know, I let my skis do the talking for me. And you know, I did pretty well at it. You know, climbed the ranks throughout my younger years. Then into high school, I went away to like a boarding school. I was fortunate enough to be able to do that, and where I was able to ski every day in the wintertime, and that made a big difference. Yeah, and then decided to go to college at University of Colorado in Boulder, and skied for the ski team there, which is, you know, one of the top ski programs in the U.S. on the collegiate circuit. Yeah, and then my sophomore year there at CU Boulder, we were dry land training in the fall, and I crashed actually on my mountain bike. Broke two vertebrae in my upper back.
Oh.
Yeah. And then basically, you know, when I got out of bed 6 to 8 weeks later, they said I could ride a road bike. You know, skiing was out of the question for that winter.
And, no kidding.
Yeah. And little did I know, I had no idea, but Boulder is a huge cycling town, you know, maybe bigger than a ski town, you know? So the doctor said I could ride a road bike, not a mountain bike, but a road bike. And so, yeah, I mean, I just kind of got out of my frustration. I couldn't, you know, train with the ski team that winter. And so I was, you know, that was the first time since I was a kid that I wasn't able to ski. So, yeah, just after class, I'd get out on my road bike and go get lost, you know, north of Boulder, Colorado. And, you know, I'd run into people that were pretty serious about it, you know, top amateurs, or even professionals living in and around Boulder. And people kept telling me I was pretty good at it. And, people told me to join the CU cycling team. So I did that. And, you know, a year later, I won the collegiate national championships back in Boston, and kind of the rest is history, you know. And then the following year, I was invited to run on the U.S. national team. You go, you know, all around the world for, you know, 10, 11 months out of the year. It was a great opportunity for me. And then the following year, I was a professional, 1995, first year as a pro. So,
wow.
Yeah, it happened really fast, kind of happened by accident, and it was quite an experience. You know, a couple of years, you know, fast forward a couple of years after turning pro, you know, I was on the start line in the Tour de France, and that was 1997.
Wow.
And I felt like I was by far the greenest rider in the race, you know. So, I
mean, yeah, but you were tough.
Part of me felt like I shouldn't even have been there, you know. So, but it was, you know, a great experience, obviously. You know, take out a couple things, and you know, a lot of fun. We travel all around the world and had some pretty amazing experiences for sure, and get to see many different cultures, the way people operate around the world, and you know, it was a lot of fun. So yeah, but I feel very lucky. You know, I grew up with two great parents, you know, taught me the difference between right and wrong, and when you do make mistakes, you know.
Yeah, you do.
Apologize, face them, and you know that. Yeah, we can talk more about that. I'm sure, maybe. In this interview, but yeah. And feel lucky too to have an older brother and sister. You know, they kind of showed me the way, showed me the ropes. And, I feel like that was a big advantage because you learn everything a little bit younger when you have an older brother and older sister.
Yeah, you were the baby, huh?
I was the baby. Yep.
Let me remind our listeners, we're speaking with Tyler Hamilton, catching up with him. I have to admit, and I haven't told him this yet, but I'm going to tell him right now, that actually he and I met once at a trade show. Yes, you signed a poster for me. And
awesome.
And it was framed in my shop for a long time. And then one of my clients, who was totally in love with Tyler Hamilton, talked me out of this poster.
No way.
She has it. No, she has. She's a wonderful woman. She started racing when she was 51.
Wow.
I felt that she kind of deserved to have something that, you know, and yeah, she won a bunch of Masters medals, and yeah, she got on she was a horse whisperer.
Oh,
so,
wow.
Yeah,
wow.
So she trained equestrians, but then she got on a bike and just was, she was brutal, just brutal, but that's beside the point. So now you're in Missoula, which is kind of an interesting town. Adventure cycling is what I think of there. Let's talk about what you're doing now, and maybe in the second half of our interview, maybe we'll get into some of the history, and because I have some questions about what you think about certain things right now. But
sure,
tell me about Missoula and why Missoula, as you were in Boulder.
Yeah. I was in Boulder for a long time. You know, went there in the fall of 1990 to go to college, and then really just fell in love with the West, and fell in love with Boulder. It was just a great town. But yeah, I lived there for a long time. I called that really home for a long time. And then, you know, fast forward a bunch of years, and 2012, it was like, I felt like it was a time to make a change. You know, I was writing a really controversial book at the time. You know, I was dealing with, you know, my turbulent past with it, you know, in the doping world. And that was kind of coming to the surface, I would say. And, yeah, it was just time. It was time. I felt like I was, you know, a little bit persona non grata, you know, and understandably so. So I just felt like a change was maybe a good thing for me.
Do I remember an incident that happened in Boulder? That somebody confronted you in a restaurant or a bar? Is that true?
Yeah. That happened. Yeah. That happened in Aspen, Colorado.
Oh,
yep.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. That, well, you know, it's, there was a, you know, there was a lot of pissed off people for sure. Mm-hmm. And rightly so. But I just felt like if I was going to be moving forward, I felt like maybe Boulder wasn't the place for me anymore. I just kind of felt like I needed a break from it.
How'd you come up with Missoula? Oh, go ahead.
And and I heard that Bozeman was like a small Boulder. And so initially it was Bozeman that I was interested in. And, so I was taking a look at that. And then I heard about Missoula, and I just did some research on it, came up for like a long weekend, and I don't know, I just fell in love with it. And it reminds me of kind of Boulder back in like 1990.
Huh.
And I didn't know if I'd be, you know, at the time I was just looking for almost like a quick fix, really. And so I didn't know if I'd be here for 6 months or a year. But yeah, here I am 8 years later, and it's been quite awesome. You know, just a normal person here in Montana. You know, bike racing's not at the forefront like down in down there on the Front Range of Colorado.
Right. Are you still riding?
Nice. A little bit. Yeah, not like, you know, before, but you know, I get out a couple times a week usually on my mountain bike. You know, there's a lot of good dirt here, trails and jeep trails and gravel roads. So and I feel like it's a lot safer to ride on the dirt, you know.
Yeah, boy, I hate to have that conversation, but we may have to.
Yeah. I remind everybody, you know, use your lights.
Yeah,
you know,
really.
A blinky red light on the back makes a big difference. So, you know, people are more distracted than ever these days, and they're driving their cars. So use one of those lights. Do it for the driver so they can see you, you know.
Do you use a mirror?
I don't, but, you know, not opposed to it for sure.
Yeah,
be seen. You want to be seen. So, you know, if you can wear a bright jersey or a bright colored helmet, you know, I think that's important.
I do too.
If you have the option to go off road in the dirt on a gravel road or jeep trail or single track, you know, it's good for your skills, bike handling skills, that's for sure. You know, and it's a lot of fun.
What are you riding?
It's just awesome. I ride a great mountain bike made by Santa Cruz. It's a dual suspension,
yeah.
Which is just first time I've ever ridden dual suspension, and it's just awesome.
Yeah, you're having fun with it.
It's awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So what else are you doing?
So yeah, moved here 8 years ago. You know, took the first few years were a little bit chaotic. Just you know, the book came out about 6 months after I moved here. Controversial book. I feel like it kind of shook the cycling world a little bit. So yeah, there were some years where I was traveling a lot, doing a lot of like public speaking, and yeah, you know, it was a good experience, but it wasn't easy. You know, you're just talking about the past.
Yeah. Well, maybe it's a purge.
But, yeah, for sure.
Yeah. So we've alluded to it several times. It's called The Secret Race. It was written by Tyler and a really cool guy named Daniel Coyle, who, interestingly enough, at the time I talked to Daniel when the book came out, which I did, he was on my show.
Yeah, I heard your interview. Great. He's a great guy.
He was here in Cleveland. I think his wife is from Cleveland. So it was kind
She's from Cleveland, yep.
Yeah, it was just kind of a synchronistic thing. I want to talk about something completely different before we'll take a break at some point and come back, and then we'll get some serious stuff in. But I want to talk about something that you and your dad do, and it's called MS Global.
Yeah, yeah.
So who inspired that, and what is it, and is it going to happen in 2020 is such a weird year.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And great question. Thanks for bringing that up. MS Global was, I guess it was my brainchild a long time ago. It was like, we've been doing it this year. It would have been year number 18.
Wow.
So I started working, you know, on the fight against MS, 1997, I believe. A good friend of mine, his mother-in-law had MS. I didn't know anything about the disease. I knew of a ski racer who was a big hero of mine, Jimmy Huga. I knew he had MS, but you know, I didn't know much about the disease. I was invited to do this charity event outside of Boston, just south of Boston. And I went down there, did this ride, you know, 75-mile ride. And during the ride, I was riding with people with MS. I was riding with people whose husband or wife had MS, or coworker, friend, brother, sister. And I was just like, wow, this is a tough, tough disease. And I felt like me being there was helpful. And I was like, I'm going to continue to do at least this ride, if not more. And so every year it got, you know, a little bit bigger and bigger, and did a lot of work with the MS Society. And then fast forward a few years, I started my own foundation. It was called, well, I don't have it anymore, but it was called the Tyler Hamilton Foundation. It's focused on the fight against MS. And our marquee ride back then was, we did a bunch of rides throughout the year, but our big marquee ride was called MS Global. And it was, you know, I thought every state has their MS ride, but they didn't really have a global event. And I thought, you know, why not? Let's do it. And so, yeah, that started in 18 years ago. And it's a week-long ride every September. And we change locations every year. So it's been, you know, it's a global event. So, yeah, we try to do it all around the world.
Wow.
This year it was supposed to be in Bend, Oregon. But, yeah, it's postponed till 2021. So
it's off the
books. We're looking forward to that. Yeah. And then so 2022, I think we'll be over in Italy. So,
oh,
yeah, it's
a
lot of work. Yeah, it's a lot of work. And fortunately, my dad has stepped up to the plate and taken over and just has run the show for the last, 10 years. So he's kept it alive. He's kept it alive for sure. It's been a great event. And we've raised, $250,000 every year. Every penny goes to CanDo MS, which is a nonprofit in the Vail Valley in Colorado that helps teaches people with MS and their families how to lead a better life.
Nice.
And it's been
cool.
It's something I'll do for the rest of my life, and you know, a lot of people have been dealt, you know, bad cards. And
in that regard, I'll say we're going to take a real quick break and we'll come back. We're going to talk with Tyler Hamilton some more. You're listening to The Outspoken Cyclist. The Outspoken Cyclist is proud to have Bike Law as a trusted partner. If you find yourself in need of legal advice or assistance as it pertains to any cycling issue, log on to bikelaw.com. So we are back on The Outspoken Cyclist. I'm your host, Diane Jenks, and we are speaking with one of my heroes, Tyler Hamilton. So Tyler hasn't been racing a bike for a really long time, but I do, and I don't want to like dwell on the past, but I want to ask you about a couple.
Oh, it's okay. We can talk about it. No problem.
Well, I understand, but if people want to know what happened, they can read the book, The Secret Race, because it's all in there, and it's been out a while, and if you had any interest in what did happen back in U.S. Postal Service days and Postal Team Service days and all of that, it's in there. But I want your opinion about some things. Somebody contacted me recently, and I'm not going to use his name because everybody knows who he is, but he was really upset that an ex-pro, not you, who was banned for doping is writing and coaching riders without really acknowledging his past. And he's upset, and he wants to know, or he wants to have a conversation as to whether that's okay. He actually canceled his subscription to a magazine because they were promoting this book, which, you know, might be a little over the top, but maybe not. Do you think there's a way that somebody, and like you, can give back to the sport that acknowledges the kind of bitter past, and but offers kind of a sweet future for younger, new riders?
Yeah. I can't really speak for every individual, but how I feel is, like, I have an ugly past, you know, a lot of us do. And I feel like I have an obligation to share it with everybody, especially the younger generations, to make sure what happened to me, what happened to a bunch of individuals, doesn't happen to them. So I talk about it very openly, and I encourage people to ask questions about it. I do try to talk about it as much as possible, although it's, you know, not easy. And sometimes you're, you know, it's just always about the past, but it's important. So, you know, we can also talk about, you know, the present and the future, but it's, we can't forget about the past. If we forget about it, if we just, you know, sweep it under the rug, then it's going to happen again. And we got to make sure that doesn't ever happen again.
So when you talk about it to, let's say, younger riders who look to you to say, this is what you did, this is what my coach is saying, or this is what my team wants me to do, what can you say to younger riders to say, you need to stay clean? It's really important to the sport and to keeping the sport alive, especially in the U.S. I mean, Europe might still be doing what it's doing, but now we're kind of landlocked here.
Yeah. Don't rush into any decision. That's for sure. I mean, I sure did. You know, I thought, I heard that when I arrived at the top league, at the top of the sport in 1997, you know, it was, doping was really prevalent. And one of the team doctors came into my room after a tough week-long stage race and, you know, offered me a little red testosterone pill. And, you know, I wish I'd sat back and thought about it for a day or two. And I didn't. I looked up to this doctor, and I saw there was a chance they were starting to believe in me and starting to believe in my talent. And I didn't want to ruffle anybody's feathers. And so I just went along with it. And, yeah, I mean, I wish I had listened to my gut. You know, I wish I'd maybe called my parents and talked to them about it, or, you know, my wife at the time, Haven, you know, but I didn't. Yeah, I crossed that line, and then it made, crossing that line again a little bit easier. And then the next time after that, a little bit easier. So, you know, listening to your gut, and, you know, you can make, you know, these are big decisions if you choose to go down that wrong road, you know, and you can't ever go back. You can't ever go back, you know. I look at my results, not the same. Ever since I took that first red little testosterone pill way back in the spring of 1997, yeah, I don't really look at my results since then. You know, they all have an asterisk, you know.
Yeah.
Even if I had stopped doping, you know, for some races, or, you know, it's just different. It's different. And, yeah, I bought into it. And, you know, here I am, whatever, 20 years later, still talking about it, you know. And I tell people that, you know, take a couple steps back, look at the big picture, you know, make the right decision.
Do you look at the sport today? Are you following it at all?
Yeah, you know, I've started to follow it again a lot. You know, I like it.
Me too.
Let me change it. I love it. It's a beautiful sport. There were some years I totally turned my back to it. You know, I mean, I couldn't even put on Lycra. Even for like a charity event, I wore like baggy shorts. You know, like I was so anti-cycling. I was tired of it. I was tired of what happened.
It burned you out.
I was burned out. But so it took a few years, and certainly enjoying it again. You know, I do it. I cycle myself. I mean, I'm a recreational cyclist now. You know, I coach people who are really good. But I don't. You know, I'm not out there doing intervals anymore. The last time I did an interval was, I think, in 2009.
Wow.
You know, I don't use a cycling computer. I just go out and ride and enjoy nature. You know, being here in Montana, I feel very lucky to just a few miles away, you're in like true Montana.
Let me remind our listeners again, we're speaking with Tyler Hamilton, and we're just kind of catching up on what's going on with him 20-some-odd years later. So do you keep in touch with any of the riders who were teammates, or is that also in the past?
You know, every once in a while I have a conversation with an old teammate or something, but I wouldn't say anyone in particular I'm in touch with, on like a weekly basis. But yeah, I run into some old teammates once in a while, and it's always great to catch up. We had Marty Jemison, who was a teammate of mine, on a little podcast recently, and it was just good to talk with him and hear his perspective on everything.
Yeah, Marty was on my show talking about his touring company. Well, and that's how I got to you, was through Marty's post that he had just...
Thank you, Marty.
Yes, thank you, Marty. Shout out to Marty, for sure. Yeah, do you think cycling is cleaner today? Is it a cleaner sport, truly?
I mean, I think so. I mean, that's, from the outside, it looks a lot cleaner, and looks like they're certainly training a lot harder than... I feel like not everyone knew how to train back when I was racing, or knew the difference of like what it meant to train really hard and really be focused. It seems like the riders these days, the gals and the guys, are training that much harder, they're that much more focused. But I don't know. I mean, they're still catching riders once in a while, so that means it's not completely clean, because typically they're not catching everyone that's cheating, unfortunately. But it's a lot better, I would say.
Yeah, it cracks me up when some Masters rider in a Grand Fondo is kicked out for doping. It's like, you're 55 years old. What is your problem? Really?
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
I mean, why would you? I don't understand that. So.
Yeah, the pressure to succeed,
Well, that's interesting.
It's everywhere. It's everywhere. It is everywhere, So, I mean, people are cutting corners in every industry. So it's not just the cyclists, that's for sure. And it's not, in sport, it's happening all over the place in sport, that's for sure. And,
How do you think things are going to change with this pandemic and social distancing and wearing masks, and we're going to come back out at some... I mean, some people are out, and then they're being stupid and they're ending up having to close back down again. But how do you think things are going to change?
Yeah, it's interesting. I don't have the answer to that question, really. But, I work for a financial advisory group down in Denver called the Black Swift Group. And I was down there doing some work last week, and I actually went to a bike race out in Golden, Colorado. It was like on a circuit. Everyone wore masks. Everyone was socially distanced. All the racers, wore a mask to the line, and I think with like 20 seconds before they started the gun, people were able to take the masks off. So,
wow.
Interesting. I've never been to a bike race like that before, but it looked like they did a really good job, and people seemed really happy about it. I don't know if that's the new norm, at least for now, but yeah, it's wild. It's what a wild time.
It is a wild time.
But I remind everybody just to be like patient and just take a few deep breaths and, get enough sleep, drink a lot of water, and get outside, That's a good, that's like the foundation of staying sane a little bit,
And do some yoga.
Sleep, water, yoga. Yeah. Sleep, water, yoga, and get outside.
Is Missoula closing down any streets to cars so that people could bike and walk more?
No, not yet. Not yet. Not yet. But you're seeing a lot of people, the trailheads are full.
Yeah. I don't know if that's good or bad.
Definitely noticing a lot of people from out of state. I'd say the bike paths are pretty full and the walking paths are pretty busy. But, there's a silver lining to all this. People are recognizing that, being outdoors, more consistently helps them just feel better, right? I mean, look at the cycling, look at the bike industry, right? We're in a bike boom.
Yes, we are.
People can't get their hands on bikes these days. Bike shops are in need for bicycles and components and all the accessories, because people have been shopping.
Service is backed up too. It's really interesting to see people hauling bikes out of their garages and basements that they haven't looked at in 20 years.
Yeah.
Then now there's no tires and tubes and chains. It's really, it is interesting.
But that's exciting. You know, what's it going to look like when they finally do have enough product and all that, right? So, I mean, I'm excited to see that, what that effect is going to be like.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a beautiful sport and a lot like yoga, right? You go out for an hour bike ride, 2 hour bike ride, you come back, you feel a lot better, right?
You do.
What you were stressing about before that ride, you know, you've totally forgotten, or maybe you've worked it out in your head how to like deal with it appropriately.
Maybe.
Yeah, maybe. Or maybe not.
Or maybe not.
Or maybe you just have a little bit more patience when you come back, you know?
Yeah. What do you think your future is going to be here? What are you going to be doing, let's say, a year from now, 2 years from now?
Yeah. You know, I'll continue with my coaching business. That's been a lot of fun. I started in the financial world this last year. This great group in Denver had reached out to me, the Black Swift group, and they've been doing amazing things. And I passed my Series 65 exam, which is, what was that, back in February. So I'm going to be focused on that. So I'll be down in Colorado for like a week every month. And that's been nice to, you know, see a lot of old friends and old faces. And yeah, you know, continuing to try to help with the fight against MS. It's still a big problem.
Yeah, it is.
So many people's lives are being affected massively by this shitty, shitty disease. And yeah, I mean, I have a lot of friends with MS and it's not pleasant.
It is not. So, none of these diseases are pleasant. COVID is not pleasant. So this is a weird question. Have you lost anybody to COVID?
To COVID? No, not yet. Not yet. But no. But to MS, yes. MS, yes. So, you know, getting out and adventuring. My girlfriend and I were about to head out for a little bike pack adventure in northwestern Montana.
Oh, nice. Do you take the dog?
This time we're not. We're still working on a trail, like the appropriate trailer. And just, we're going to be primarily on like Jeep trails and dirt roads. So we didn't want to like just have her shaking around for 3 days. So some good friends are going to take care of her.
Well, that's
yeah,
nice.
But it's fun. It's bike packing is a lot of fun. It's kind of what got me back into cycling a little bit. You know, I love backpacking, but you know, all that weight you're carrying on your back and on your hips, you know, you typically get sore knees and all that, but this is all, you know, most 90% of the weight's on your bike. You know, you get to travel, you know, you travel slowly, but you travel a lot faster than by foot.
Sure.
And it's a great way to see different parts of the world, you know, and non-expensive and just fun and really connect with nature. And yeah, I mean, I'm excited. Northwestern Montana is super remote, you know. Got to be aware, bear aware. There are grizzly bears up there.
Ooh.
So we got to be super careful.
So you take everything with you?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So you're self-contained. Very cool.
Self-contained. Yeah, it's neat. It's neat. I'd recommend trying it. You know, you can do it. You don't have to do it for 3-4 days. You can do it just for a night.
Right. Right.
It's fun.
A 24-hour.
It's fun to be like self-sufficient.
Yeah. Grant Peterson always talks about the 24-hour, you know, out and back. Like it from, he's out in California somewhere and he just goes like to the San Francisco Bridge. Stays overnight and comes back home.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It works.
Yeah, you can also stay in a hotel too. Like, just bring your stuff, carry all your clothes, and a few snacks, plenty of water, and just go. It's tons of fun. Tons of fun. I don't know. Maybe it's some. I am. You know, next year I'll be 50, so I am getting older. And I always thought like bike touring was for older people. here we go. Maybe I'm officially middle aged. So. Yeah. But it is fun. And I'd recommend it for the younger generations, like just getting out, disconnecting, you know, typically I like it when you have no cell phone reception. And yeah.
So did you ever see yourself doing what you're doing at 50? Did you ever look forward and say, I wonder what my life's going to be like at 50?
You know, I never really did.
Me neither.
I never really did. Yeah. It was just kind of taken as it came along. And,
Me too.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I definitely like being active and, you know, I feel a lot better when I'm active. Yeah. So, you know.
Well, I haven't seen you in a while. Is your hair still long?
You know, my hair's starting to fall out. I'm starting to, you know, I'm almost 50. So, yeah, my hair's short now. You know, starting to have some of that balding. So, yeah, it's good. But, you know, the new me is short hair. I got hairy legs. Yeah. So it's,
not shaving your legs, short hair.
I think I shaved my legs for like 20 years.
That's enough.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now you know how women feel. It's like ridiculous, isn't it?
Totally. It is ridiculous. It is ridiculous. It's hard. It's hard. My podcast that we do, we were talking to Dave Weens yesterday, you know, the mountain bike legend.
Yeah.
He never shaved his legs. That was pretty interesting. Never.
Even maybe he never fell down either.
Yeah, probably. Probably. But yeah, really good guy. You should have him on your show. Super nice guy.
I will.
Works for IMBA. Yep. International Mountain Bike Association.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I've had people from IMBA. Yeah. You know what? Okay. This is going to sound really weird, but after over 2,500 interviews, he may have been on the show. I have no idea.
Maybe.
10 years. Yeah. You know, I mean, yeah. It's just I'm losing my mind with this
That's
show.
Great.
Sometimes.
But he's really well spoken. Yeah. Huge advocate for getting out on your bike, especially on the dirt.
Well, this has just been delightful. I am so glad that Marty posted what he posted and that we got to actually find a time to talk. But I do have two questions to ask you that you have to answer. What's your favorite food?
Ooh, man, chocolate cake.
Sara Lee chocolate cake? I love chocolate cake and I never eat it.
I'm a vegan now, so there's great vegan chocolate cake. I mean, it's awesome.
Are you really?
Back when I was a racer, diet was so important and your weight was so important that I would always like dream of chocolate cake because I couldn't really eat it very often, you know, so, but yeah.
What made you become a vegan, just out of curiosity?
Let's see, like 5 years ago, 4 or 5 years ago, vegetarian for a year, and then I went full bore vegan. Yeah.
Hmm.
Yeah, I love animals. I love animals. I love animals. I can't. Yeah. So.
I have a friend who said, if it has a face, I don't eat it.
Yeah. But each to their own.
I know. Well, I appreciate that. What kind of music do you like to listen to?
Ooh, classic rock and roll.
There you go.
Yeah.
There you go. Wow.
Yeah. But yeah, just living a normal life here in Missoula, Montana. You know, I feel lucky to have kind of made it through all this. You know, there were some kind of heavy years, some dark years, and you know, dealing with the truth. And but yeah, I feel very, really fortunate today.
Truth sets you free.
A lot of people have forgiven me and I appreciate.
Well, because you owned up to it.
Me being honest.
You know, you told them what was so. I think that makes a huge difference rather than saying, no, I never did it. No, I never did it. No, I never did it. You know?
Yeah. Which I did.
And you paid the price in a lot of ways.
Yeah. You know, I still feel like I paid a price a little bit, you know, but it's been understandably so. I made a huge mistake. Hopefully people can learn from, you know, the mistake that I made, that some of us made.
Yeah, I hope so.
It was a big one. And, you know, I didn't mean for all this to happen. That's for sure.
Right. No.
But it did. And, you know, I got to accept it and take responsibility. And, you know, that's what I've done. And I'll continue to do so.
And that's why you're still one of my heroes.
Oh, thanks. Thanks, Diane. But I feel lucky. You know, forgiveness is a beautiful thing, you know.
Yes.
I felt like I was 10 years too deep into it to get forgiveness. And, you know,
no.
As soon as that book came out, I felt like so much forgiveness. And it was almost like too much because I went from being like, you know, the persona non grata to a lot of people forgive me. It was almost like too much at the beginning. Yeah. Which is strange to say, you know.
Well, you know, you kept it inside for a while.
Yeah, I did. And that doesn't do you any good.
No, I know. And I still recommend, if anybody wants to read it, it's an excellent book called The Secret Race by Tyler Hamilton and Dan Coyle. So, Tyler, tell people how to find out about your podcast and about your coaching. I mean, here's your platform. Do it.
Oh, yeah. Oh, thanks, Diane. Yeah, the podcast is, we started probably about 6 months ago. It's just a friend of mine who lives up in Calgary, Canada. His name's Pete. And yeah, it's called Adventure Audio. So yeah, you can find that wherever podcasts are, wherever you find podcasts. Yeah, a ton of fun. I like interviewing just all different people of all different ages and abilities. Just in general, we like to interview people that like to get outdoors and do adventurous type things. It's been fun seeing how people, what makes them tick and what motivates them. And, you know, every interview we do, I take something out of it and use that to kind of motivate myself, make myself a better person. So that's been cool. Fun. The Yeah, the coaching business, we've been doing that since like 2009. It's called Tyler Hamilton Training, really simple, kind of customized training programs for all different ages and abilities, you know. And that's been fun. You know, it's a lot of similar training that I did, you know, interval training that I did when I was racing at the highest level.
That you don't have to do anymore.
That I don't have to do anymore. No, but I do as I say, not as I do,
right,
you know.
Exactly.
But yeah, I mean, I don't know. It's hard work. We have our clients work hard, but then, you know, in between resting hard. And a lot of people have great bikes and all that and limited amount of time, but they don't know how to train efficiently.
So, well, there's also skills. Yeah. A lot of people do not have the skills to handle these really good bikes.
That's true. That is true. Yep. So it's been a lot of fun. I've Jim Capper is the head coach and I help out when I can. And it's been fun. I know we've helped a lot of people along the way. Just getting people on bikes is so important. You know, we work with a lot of just recreational cyclists who are super new at it, and to see how their life changes with the addition of the bicycle, it's just, really inspiring, really inspiring. So yeah, the bike's pretty awesome.
Yeah. It is awesome. It is a great equalizer.
If you're having a bad day, put your helmet on, go out and pedal your bike.
Go around the block. Go get an ice cream.
Exactly. And see how you feel when you get back. Yeah. Even just a cruiser ride, you know, downtown to get a cup of coffee. That's great. Or, you know, ride to work once in a while, you know.
Well, except nobody's going to work.
Yeah, that's true.
You ride around the block and you're back at work.
There you go. There you go. Yeah.
Well, Tyler, thank you so much for taking time to talk with me today. It has been a joy, and I hope things stay well for you. Stay
Thank
safe.
You.
Have fun on your bikepacking adventure, and we will find a time to talk again.
Oh, I look forward to it. I look forward to it. Thanks so much for having me on, and thanks for your patience. I know it wasn't easy to
to nail you down.
That's okay. Yeah.
I got you.
Yeah, but I appreciate it. And keep up the good work.
Thank
keep
you. You too.
Okay.
Take
Thank
care.
You.
Bye.
Take care. Bye-bye.
I hope you enjoyed my conversation with Tyler Hamilton. It's been more than 11 years since Tyler's professional racing career ended, and there are stories of his grit and abilities that, regardless of any drug in your system, would make any but practically immortals cringe. But his career did end, and he owned up to all of it in his book, The Secret Race. If you're interested in his coaching services, you can go to tylerhamiltontraining.com, or you can listen to his show, Adventure Audio, wherever you get your podcasts. Thank you so much for listening. I'll be back next week with a brand new show. Please remember to stay safe, wear your mask, and if you have a chance, go for a ride. Bye-bye.
Thanks for joining us today on The Outspoken Cyclist with Diane Jenks. We hope you enjoyed this week's show and welcome your comments and thoughts on Twitter and Facebook. Visit OutspokenCyclist.com to hear this and all past shows. We'll be back next week with more great conversation and news from the world of cycling. Remember, you can subscribe to our podcast on iTunes or Stitcher and never miss an episode. The Outspoken Cyclist is a copyrighted production of DBL Promotions with the assistance of WJCU-FM Cleveland, a service of John Carroll University. Thanks again for listening, ride safely, and we'll see you next week.